Hello, I'm Michael Sheriffs. Welcome to Creative Instinct on RN, RA and the web. And today we dip into the perfect worlds of Antonio Santaolalla. Before we had architects like Mies van der Rohe constructing a modernist aesthetic for the 20th century, we had the almost sci-fi imaginings of a young Italian, whose grandest visions never left the page, but still have a power over designers today. Antonio Santaolalla was a socialist whose life was tragically cut short at the age of 28 by the First World War. But strangely, his designs have become synonymous with the Italian Futurists, a proto-fascist group of artists founded by Filippo Marinetti. And as with any ideological movement worth its salt, they had a manifesto, being read here by Marinetti himself.
Gatti, vecchiatori, purificatori, innovatori e velocizzatori, creato il 20 febbraio 1909 da un gruppo di poeti.
The Futurists were fans of machines, speed, and the violence of war. Antonio Santaolalla didn't share their love of war, but he was a product of the machine age. And today I'm joined by two people who are also fascinated by the thwarted imagination of this young designer. Professor Esther da Costa Meyer is an art historian and teacher in modern architecture at Princeton University in the US. And Mara Baracco is both an architect and a teacher at RMIT University in Melbourne. Welcome to you both.
Pleasure.
It's our pleasure.
Esther, first of all, who was Antonio Santaolalla?
Well, he was this gifted young designer from Como who never finished the university, a school of architecture, but who had extraordinary and visionary powers of draftsmanship and dreamed this extraordinary modern city. And this was long before Mies planned his beautiful glass skyscrapers of 1921 and 22, before anything like that could be seen. So he was ahead of his time in this vision. And he made entire generations dream, and that dream is still with us.
Mara, we're talking about an architect that died at the age of 28 and had, I think, only one of his designs constructed. So why are we talking about him? Why is he important?
Well, the images were amazing, so innovative, so full of energy, but also clarity about a certain idea of future. At the same time, we don't know if he could have been successful. We don't know whether he's over-celebrated or not, because there is no evidence. Obviously, all these images are really important. Yet at the same time, Santaolalla, I tend to think, is a kind of a mystery. He died young. He died, as we know, in 1916 during the war. And so I think that combined with the energy of these images, there is also a sense of mystery, of sense of wondering about what he could have been, really.
Well, Esther, give me a bit of context for Santaolalla's world. What is the world that he evolved into?
Well, this is very interesting. Santaolalla and his friend Chiatone were fascinated with the strident world of the metropolis, with publicity and of these kind of science fiction illustrations, and very interested in science fiction. Mario Morasso, an Italian writer, and these worlds of the future that didn't exist. These were not scholarly works. So he was looking at that. He was also looking at the Viennese, the secessionists, who, after all, were very close by. Now, we lost much of this material because his work in Chiatone's studio was bombarded during World War II. But we have traced some of the things that he was adds in the Scientific American that were translated into Italian, and drawings of Italians who were dreaming about a new future, but not at that level. But he was looking at urban popular culture, which the academics were not looking at. And so that gave him a purchase on this other world where other things were possible that were not being accepted in the schools of architecture.
Mara, is it significant that born in 1888, he was born into a world of the industrial age, of machines, of a sort of a modern aesthetic, a modern sort of edge, and modern materials too, and that was all that he really knew? Was it important that constructed his natural aesthetic, it's an almost native aesthetic.
I think we commonly think that Santalia and Futurism are somehow symptomatic of this inclination towards a functionalist type of progression, a modern town, a modern way of living, a modern city, La Città Nuova. And it's true that in his manifesto, Santalia starts by saying architecture has died since 18th century. Obviously, what he's targeting, and Esther said this very well when Esther says that Santalia is so innovative, especially in the way he looks at the urban scale. And what he's targeting is this sort of wedding cake architecture, decorated architecture. Architecture in as a single object, whereas if you look at his drawings are about this urban scale, almost the idea that there is no hierarchy between architecture or urban, and for that matter, even landscape, which is something that makes it very contemporary, I tend to think. On the other end, it's true that he's, just following your question, it's true that he... In his manifesto, he talks about the modern material, glass, concrete, iron, steel, and so on, even cardboard. So I would go even beyond all these historical moments that he's counteracting. After all, if you look at many of his images are images with arches, lots of arches, images with buttresses, and buttresses are something that already we can find in the world of the ancient Roman, but also then in the world of the Romanesque tradition. So I'm saying here that to me, Santalia is so important, enigmatic, and still very valuable today because it makes you wonder. On the one hand, he has a step in the world of modernism, which we know in Italy has always been pretty problematic. You know, modernism in Italy never really existed. And on the other hand, he still has a step in the world of tradition. In fact, if you look at the city that he was drawing, in the end, it's not the city of today. It's a city that is still pretty medieval, I tend to think, in his urban, architectural, but also social characters. And by social, I mean, I tend to agree with a very important Italian historian who wrote some essential papers on Santalia, Carlo Giulio Argan. And Argan used to say that the future for Santalia was never really the future of the industrial city developed by single businessmen, by single developers, which ironically is the city we have to live with today. But for him was always the city that much more medievally is a city that is built up by an idea of cooperative, by a cooperative of workers. And this is very
medieval. So a collective environment, collective
urban
environment.
Yes, that's right.
Well, we've been referring to Antonio Sedelia's own manifesto on architecture. Here's a little taste of what is a very passionate document.
No architecture has existed since 1700, a moronic mixture of the most various stylistic elements used to mask the skeletons of modern houses is called modern architecture. I proclaim that futurist architecture is the architecture of calculation, of audacious temerity and of simplicity. The architecture of reinforced concrete, of steel, glass, cardboard, textile fibre, and of all those substitutes for wood, stone and brick that enable us to obtain maximum elasticity and lightness.
Well, nothing particularly ambiguous about that. He was clearly a very serious young insect. Esther de Costamare, you've written that this period of the late 19th century and into the early 20th century was a crisis for Italy because although the country existed on paper as a unified political entity, culturally the regions had almost nothing in common, including language. So how important were creative minds like Santalia in trying to sort of construct some sort of shared identity for Italians?
Well, he was immensely important for younger generations or people who were more open because I think I say somewhere that it was almost a kind of belated risorgimento. He was that kind of a figure. He had the kind of vitalist elan, that kind of drive towards a language that spoke to everybody, that spoke beyond the regionalisms and the particularisms which characterized Italy at the time. And even, I want to go back to some very important things that Mauro pointed out, even the kind of archaisms that you see in Santalia were quite fascinating, because Santalia was, on one hand, he had the ideals of this belated Risorgimento, of speaking to a country that was emerging fast, but not fast enough for him. He had to leap over the situation of his day. But as Mauro said very well, he didn't have all the elements in place. And Santalia was also well served by his limits. He dropped out of School of Architecture. He did not know how to make interiors. I mean, there's one section, I think, in all of these skyscrapers. So they were really monolithic in many ways. In one of them, you see the arches. There are a few, actually, I'm sorry, where you see these arches, these parabolic arches that Mauro was talking about. So he was also, in many ways, a vedutista in that great tradition, drawing romantic, scenographic things, but projected into a future that he saw as possible, and a future that was in a way fueled by the ideals of Milano. Milano, which is producing cars, producing airplanes, the Caproni plant, and all the other, Torino, of course, nearby. So many streams fed into this young river that became Sant'Elia, and some of them pushing towards the future, but some of them, Mauro pointed out, pushing from the past that he was still clinging to, in very often conscious and unconscious ways.
One of the most common framings for Sant'Elia is to include him in the movement in Italy, we referred to this before, which became known as the Futurists, who were obsessed with machines, speed, violence. It was a very sort of fast sort of ideology of change and a very reactionary sort of ideology. How much of this is an accurate framing for him? How much of it is actually a misreading of who he was? I mean, Mauro, you don't like him being included under that tag of futurist, do you?
Why not? The tag does exist and is undoubtedly part of futurism. But there is a sense of tragic in Sant'Elia that I really like it, which makes him very, very different from another futurist with Marinetti. So I like to always pick the differences than cover everything under a blanket. And so, for instance, 2 weeks ago there was Beatrice Colomina here, and she gave a very interesting lecture in town, and she finished the lecture with a beautiful photo of Boccioni, Sant'Elia and Marinetti, all ready to go to war. They were all in uniform. But the expressions of Boccioni and Sant'Elia, as pointed out by Colomina, by Beatrice, was really tragic. They really knew that they were going to die. Whereas Marinetti had an expression that was like his writing.
What fun.
Like, what fun, yes. We go to war because war is part of future. So there is a rhetoric about Marinetti that probably we don't find in Sant'Elia. Sant'Elia was, of course, an idealist, and yet at the same time was a realist, more than Marinetti. So he was much more controversial, much more enigmatic. And this makes Sant'Elia a futurist, as you said, yes. But not a political futurist? No, I don't think at all. I don't think he was. Well, it's difficult to say because he died so young and we don't know. But at that stage, I don't think that he was as political animal as Marinetti was. Definitely wasn't. I really like his way of staying with these two different, almost opposite worlds, modernism and yet tradition and yet history. And actually, from this point of view, Esther said very well that, yes, it's true that Sant'Elia was opposing regionalism. And this is undoubtedly what he was trying to do, especially if we read his manifesto. But then, interestingly enough, futurism to me is a kind of regionalism, because futurism is something that developed just in that region of Como and Milano.
So he wouldn't have had as much currency further south in Italy. He would have been a product of his region and appreciated by his region.
Pretty much, because I think that unconsciously, I tend to think that the region in which you live, the landscape, and also somehow also the culture that evolved in that region, and from this point of view, the history of Milan from medieval times is very, very different, for instance, from the history of Turin, which is only 120 kilometers west of Milan.
You're with Creative Instinct on RN, RA and the Web. I'm Michael Sheriffs, and I'm discussing the prodigious imagination of a young Italian architect from the early part of the 20th century called Antonio Sandaglia. My guests are writer and arts historian Esther da Costa Meyer, who's speaking to me from New Jersey, and Melbourne-based architect and teacher Mauro Baracco. Esther, it's interesting. I mean, we haven't actually described the sorts of structures that he was envisaging. So, you know, his project, La Città Nuova, which is the new city. Describe, for example, his station, which a lot of people will know the image of but may not associate with Sandaglia. Describe that.
Well, the station is fascinating because it had a long progeny in history. Milano had had a huge competition for the main railroad station, and Sant'Elia did some quick sketches for that, but never really submitted anything. But he remained with the idea of a large central station, and so he created this enormous, rather monumental station with a kind of a suicidal airport on the top between two towers. And if you look at Le Corbusier's contemporary city for 3 million people, you will see that he lifted the idea of that central station and puts it at the foot of his great skyscraper. It is the central image in the great diorama that Corbusier presented in 1922. So Sant'Elia's station, with its perfect congruence between infrastructure and modern architecture, was something that made people dream, that made people just go back to it again and again. I told you that the Guggenheim is presenting this great exhibition on futurism next year, and this drawing of the station is one thing that they're coming back to because it's become an iconic image in the history of architecture, and it spawned a progeny among great architects. So in many ways, what's interesting here is that Sant'Elia died so young in a war he did not want to fight. The others volunteered for the war. Sant'Elia did not. He was a socialist, and they were against the war. But in a sense, because of the war, La Città Nuova became a project deferred till other architects picked up that idea and took it further, because he could not do so, having died so young.
It's interesting, though, that we talk about Sant'Elia as if he's existing in a bit of a vacuum, but he was not alone. There are many other architects that had equally visionary designs, people like Chiattoni with the Metropolis, which was exactly the same year, 1914, and shares very similar sorts of elements. So again, sort of, why do we pick Sant'Elia out from that grouping? There were other people with vast ambitions in their designs. Mauro, why do you think that is?
It's true, he was not by himself. There were already some architects, some intellectual, trying to imagine different types of architectural imagings. And when the works of Frank Lloyd Wright was presented in Berlin in 1911 and 1912, probably that work might have been somehow influential to Sant'Elia too. What made him particularly poignant at that point in time is that he was still for a moment the only one who was applying these images at an urban scale. We have to wait a few years to then have the fantastic world of Russian constructivism. But they came just a few years later.
Esther, can I ask you to go forward from after the death of Sant'Elia, the most sort of significant architectural or design aesthetic that crept in was around the time of the fascists. And I'm wondering what the connection is between Sant'Elia and people like Terani and Piacentini, who were synonymous with the style that we associate with Mussolini's reign. So what's the connection there?
Well, with Piacentini, not much, except that there was a time when Marinetti hoped to convince Mussolini that fascism should have a style, and that style should be Italian rationalism. This was, of course, later. And so there are a series of articles written by Marinetti and other futurists on Sant'Elia to prove that what they called the Bolshevik international style, Germanic style, was in fact Italian because it had been created by Sant'Elia. So Sant'Elia is pressed into service, the service of the fascist cause, even though he had been a socialist, He was a consigliere comunale, an alderman for the Socialist Party in Como. So Santelia, with total disregard for his political past, was transformed, or there was an attempt to transform him in this proto-fascist hero. But of course, that did not work. But Terragni, there's a very strong connection, because Terragni was of course born in Como, and he was working there and actually built one of the monument to World War One heroes, and it was based on one of the sketches of Santelia. And Terragni, of course, was a very, very great architect, a rationalist. And so there is a connection there. There's a personal connection. He was born in a very small, gorgeous town. He knew people who had known Santelia. He had the drawings that he could consult. He built, it's more of a Terragni construction than a Santelia, but the link is there. So there was a very strong connection there. And there was this common hope of pushing Italy into this future that they all dreamed for it. And even though Terragni had a different ideology, he admired this gifted young conterraneo, that is, this young compatriot from the same town of Como.
Maura, do you think it's an unfortunate misappropriation of Santelia's sort of utopian vision in the service of the fascists?
Well, it's interesting to also realize that Mussolini was a socialist when he actually came to the fore. He came to the fore, to the political fore, as a member of the Socialist Party.
I mean, I do wonder whether there's a sort of a tragic romance. You've talked about him as a fairly tragic figure. Whether the fact that he died young is why we love him. I mean, I'm interested, Esther, that, you know, in a sense, the only way you can know the functionality or the livability of Santelia's designs is to really test them. And, of course, no one's going to build his designs now, but the technology, the 3D modelling technology, is allowing people now to revisit those designs and construct immersive spaces where they can test the sort of utopian or dystopian qualities of a big urban space like the Città Nuova. How important is it to go back to that period now, in the 21st century, to a period at the beginning of the 20th century, and test these ideas?
Well, I think the fact that people are doing so, that you're constantly finding people who are willing to spend hours and hours and hours and thousands of dollars of time in new software to design, that shows that he's still there. I think the youthfulness has something to do with it. He became a legend early on. He died heroically in the war, in the Battaglia del Carso. So all this, and as you say, those whom the god love die young. So the fact that these buildings were never tested, have never been built, means that they exist in all their glory. The history of architecture, I don't know if Mauro would agree with me, is punctuated by the great icons that were never built. And because they were never built, they were never put to the test. And they're the ones that we go back to again and again and again. Mies van der Rohe's skyscrapers, never built, perhaps unbuildable at the time. But we go back to them because they live in this pristine glory. Time has not affected them. They have not decayed. They have not been subject to the depredations of politics, wars, or whatever. They live on in this beautiful ethereal and in this space of the imagination. And so they have an attraction that built buildings do not have.
Professor Esther da Costa Meyer, who's an art historian and a teacher of modern architecture at Princeton University in the US, and whose 1995 book, The Work of Antonio Santelia, was a very important examination of this young architect, and I reckon would well deserve being republished. And my other guest was architect and teacher Maura Baracco, who lectures in the School of Architecture at RMIT University in Melbourne, and who's been studying Santelia's work for many years.
Futurist architecture is the architecture of calculation, of audacious temerity, and of simplicity. Futurist architecture is not, because of this, an arid combination of practicality and usefulness, but remains art.
Many thanks to Matthew Crawford for his wonderful reading of Antonio Santaella's Manifesto, and to John Jacobs for his technical production. I'm Michael Sheriffs, and you can get more information and share your thoughts with us by going to the website abc.net.au/Radio National and follow the links to Creative Instinct.
On Background Briefing, the Catholic Church, Catholic clubs and pokies reform.
Catholic clubs have been committed to defeat any proposed reform, whereas the Catholic Church is actively promoting that reform.
I'm not a Catholic. I'm here to run a Catholic club.
Catholic clubs and problem gambling.
I lost my wife, I lost my house, everything.
That's Background Briefing. You can download or stream this program from the RN website.